irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, August 24th.
Is it?
It is. Does it make a difference?
No.
It's the same. 24th, 25th. It's all the same.
Yeah, it feels that way sometimes, doesn't it?
It sure does,
like, man. Like Groundhog Day, you know?
It does seem like that sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Like almost every friggin' day, you know?
Yes.
Go to work, go home. Go to work, go home. Maybe you get to do something on the weekend and that's
Maybe.
About it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all the same every day.
Yeah. Have you been otherwise? You've been above water pretty much?
Yeah, this week I've been above water, that's for sure.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a nice change of pace.
That's an accomplishment in today's world.
Yeah, it's true. It's really true.
Yeah.
How about you? What's going on?
Not much, really. The same, you know, just working, going home, working, going home.
It's like when we're not working, we're complaining we're not working. And when we're working, we're complaining that we're
exactly,
working.
Exactly.
You know,
that's
the goal is to never be happy.
Yeah. Or maybe find a happy balance.
I
you
guess.
Know?
But then when you find a happy balance, you're like, oh, just the same thing day in and day out again.
Not necessarily. You know, I mean, balance, I mean, work half the time and try to do something else in the other half of the time, you know, and and then be bored in the rest of the time. You
Can
know?
You believe we work so much?
No. No, I don't believe it.
It's crazy. I just don't think people are meant to work this much.
That's why some people were happy with the lockdowns, you know? They're like, oh, we get to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that part was great. I mean, I didn't get to slow down, but...
Right. But that didn't get to be too much, you know?
Yeah.
Too much free time.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. We got to find a balance here, but I don't know how you do that, you know?
I mean, back in the olden times, people would work for a few months to, like, plant... food and like forage and build, and then they would take a couple months to relax and they would just do that cycle over and over again.
Well,
and,
maybe some people, but not everybody, right?
I mean, back in the olden times.
Right. But still, I mean, I don't think people had vacations when, you know, barbarians were at their door trying to kill them.
That's true.
So I don't know. I you know, all in all, I think we have easier life than people have in the past, you know. I mean, look at like Afghanistan, for example, where people live in the Stone Age, you know.
Yeah.
What kind of life is that, you know? And that's what I'm saying.
It's
I mean,
not.
It, life used to be like that everywhere all the time, you know.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, we complain, but we still have... better life than everybody else. We just
I
like.
No, but I just feel like I'm just. Like,
I know
so
you can't
stuck
like
stuck in like having like I don't want to like have to work so much. Like
right.
So much of our life goes to doing services for others,
and it affects us mentally too. You know, I mean,
yeah, no,
and
that's
emotionally,
the whole thing.
You know,
yeah,
and yeah. I mean, I envy people that find some balance in their lives. You know,
yeah,
and I hope I can find that too one day. You know,
yeah,
maybe if we. Maybe if we invest in the Bitcoin or something, you know, and it goes up. But no chance for me. I'm totally out of the crypto.
Aww.
I'm not invested in it anymore. You know, it's gone up a little bit, but still, I don't know. They talk about people that become millionaires from it. But then, you know, people become millionaires from everything. It doesn't mean we can be that too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I find that with the crypto stuff, you kind of have to use private investors who kind of give you a set amount every month, no matter what. And those people exist. I've worked with some of them before.
What do you mean they give you money?
So you invest a certain amount of money.
Right.
You sign a contract with them. They give you, let's say, 20% back every month for the course of like a year, you know? So they're getting to keep that money that you gave them, play it how they can over the course of a few different kinds of crypto coins.
Right.
And whether it falls a little lower or goes way higher, they're keeping the excess and just giving you 20%
so you're like,
no matter what.
So you're like lending them the money and making interest on it.
Pretty
20%
much.
Is not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So they play with other people's money, but And how do you know they'll pay you back, you know?
I mean, I've worked with the same person for 2 years and all my clients are happy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
I've never had a client have a missed payment.
So you have somebody manage it for you?
Yeah, he's a private investor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't go directly to the investors themselves. This guy deals with the investors.
No, he is the investor.
Oh, he is.
He has a team of people that watch all the different coins and all the investments every day so they can hurry up and buy out or buy in depending on where the numbers are at.
I see.
And so you just get a set rate. You get the set 20% every month.
Right.
It's only for the duration of a year. Some people keep that money. The minimum's $5,000 to deposit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some people decide to reinvest that $1,000 every month or whatever amount they do. The biggest I've had is, I think, 75,000 people have invested. So, you know, if you invest $50,000, you're getting $5,000 every month. Or no. Yeah,
20% is
10,000. Yeah, you're getting 10,000 right. every month.
No, not every month, a year. The 20% is yearly.
No, you get the 20% monthly for the course of a year.
On the total money?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so if you do 5,000, you get 10,000 every month.
Wow.
For 1 year.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah. So after 5 months, you already make back your investment.
Right.
And by the end of the year, you more than double it.
Right. And what's your risk there? I mean, how much? Because there's always a risk, right?
I mean, he handles the risk end.
Right.
You know, but the point is he gets, after that year, he's still playing with your money somewhere.
Right.
You know?
But he may also not be able to pay you back one day. That's the risk that I'm talking about.
I haven't run into that.
Right. No, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's got quite a stockpile that he works with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see. Like a few people that do the same thing.
Yeah.
That invest their money.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like quite a good baseline of finances to work with. And he has investments in other places as well besides crypto.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good return on your money.
It's a great return.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like 200,000. No, 200% you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if you put down $50,000 and you make $120,000, in the year,
more than double your money.
Mm.
You know, and some people will take that $10,000 and just reinvest it. So now you're getting an extra $2,000. You're getting $12,000 a month now,
right?
And some people will keep it some months.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a really cool thing.
It is. I mean, I'm trying to think of what's wrong with it. What's like the catch here? I mean, that's a lot of money. I can't imagine.
I mean, the catch is that you're investing with somebody who's not Charles Schwab or it's not like he doesn't have anything on the Better Business Bureau. Like he's a private investor guy that just does
that's what
thing.
I'm saying. You know, I mean, one day he could not pay you back, you know, and you're stuck with it. So you have to trust. You really have to trust that person.
Yeah, you have to trust. But I mean, I've been working with him for 2 years and.
Yeah.
He's always on time, payments, everything.
That's
great.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, there you go. There's another way to invest for people.
Yeah. Private investors.
Yeah. Wow. In a few minutes, Jen, we're going to have a guest calling in. We're going to talk about medical malpractice today.
Great.
Sad story. And to open up our eyes a little bit to what's going on.
Sure.
You know, we trust doctors and stuff. I heard a group of doctors announced they're not going to treat unvaccinated patients.
Mm.
Now, I'm asking you, doctors are not supposed to like single somebody out that they don't take care of.
To deny care.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they swear to when they become doctors.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's even legal, but we'll see. I mean, obviously it's unethical, but I don't know about illegal, so we'll see what happens. But this is as though we didn't have enough problems as it is. Now people are fighting over the vaccines and shit, you know?
Yeah.
So yesterday the Pfizer vaccine was okayed by the FDA, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's good. You know, I mean, that makes you feel a little better.
I don't really trust the FDA, so that doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
Yeah. The FDA approves a lot of the toxic food that's on our shelves as well.
Yeah.
So that means nothing to me.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Their CEO says that there's likely to be a variant, a vaccine-resistant variant likely to emerge. Mm. And but he believes that within 3 months they can address that with their vaccines. So, there again, it's freaking depressing as hell to think about that, that we're not going to like ever get rid of all this shit. But at least we might have some protection against it,
It shouldn't be this difficult.
Well,
I don't think it should.
The viruses mutate,
I know.
And now people are saying it's because of the vaccines. Who knows? It's possible. But
I mean, there's a thing like with hand sanitizer and stuff. And like over sanitizing things that can happen called super bugs, which are bugs that are like germs that are way stronger because of having to endure like sanitation processes.
I see. They become like more resistant to.
Yeah. So maybe these new strands are kind of like super bugs.
Right. And we're carrying them while we're, it's not affecting us when we're vaccinated.
Yeah.
But we may pass them on to other people.
Sure.
So, yeah. I don't know. I got both my shots. I'll take a booster too if it helps. I mean, for crying out loud,
Yeah. I'm just over it already.
Yeah. I know. A relative of mine got COVID-19. Nothing happened, just like some fever, lost smell and taste for a few days. Just a few days.
Wow, my friend had COVID like 8 months ago and she still can't taste her smell.
Yeah, you were saying that.
That's
amazing.
That's the thing is everything varies so much.
Right.
But the thing is people, there are anti-vaxxers or anti-maskers out there who have family members who have died from this and they still don't believe
right
that it's real.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
no, it's true. I've really met them. Yeah.
People that died from it and they still don't believe in what? In the shot? Or
like their families have died from it, family members, and they still right. don't believe that COVID's like a real thing. They think it's a hoax.
Oh, really?
Or they think it's not that serious.
I haven't thought, I haven't heard of that. I've heard that people had somebody die and then they're saying, I wish he had taken the vaccine, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
But, and this person, by the way, my relative was not vaccinated.
Mm.
So, So I think it affects people differently,
That's the
that
thing.
That was a young man.
Across the board, this has been
right.
so variant of everything.
Right. And people do die from it, obviously,
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't discriminate. I mean, people that believe in it, don't believe in it, get shots, don't get shots.
And if you don't die from COVID, people also die from the complications of it.
Yeah.
Like most people who go on ventilators don't really come off.
Right. God, it's awful to be in a ventilator.
A friend of my mom's who's actually a nurse at the hospital, because they've been making nurses work even when they have COVID, they just limit them to COVID patients only. Mm. Her friend had COVID like 2 months ago, and now she's in the hospital from complications from COVID, like really? Swollen organs and like lung inflammation and all this other stuff that's happening months down the line. And that's what insurance companies are saying as well, is that they're noticing more people are dying from COVID after they've had COVID than from the immediate illness itself.
Oh.
So rather than getting sick and dying in that period that you actually have it,
right.
the aftermath of it, like the swollen organs, the blood clots, things like that, that's what's killing more people than actually COVID.
Wow. Hmm. Well, welcome to reality, 2021.
Yeah. It's wild out here.
Yeah.
I would have thought. I definitely did think.
Really?
I felt like this was coming. I just knew it.
And I felt something was coming. I thought it would be in the form of missiles from overseas or something,
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's probably coming too.
Who knows? Obviously, it's not as effective as a virus, for crying out loud. Just unleash a virus on the world.
That's fair.
And you win.
I think we should like rename our show to Doomsday with
Sam
and Jen.
It's been like that lately, right? Well, we need to bring you guys up. I just don't know how.
I mean, look.
I know. People are telling me don't read the news, but how can I not? You know, everywhere I look, there's the news, you know?
Yeah. What are we going to do? Yeah. Just have a talk show and avoid talking about what's going on?
Yeah, either that or just, you know, I mean, you go through Facebook and stuff, you know, it's like that's all there is, you know?
Yeah, that and like stupid pictures.
Yeah.
And like pictures of people's kids or something.
Yeah. All right. Here comes our guest right now on the phone. So we're going to take that and bring up our notes and everything. And we're going to be talking to Carol Stern. Carol, are you on the air with us?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you? This is Sam and Jen.
Hey, hey.
And we've been waiting for your call, so thank you for calling in. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling from the Outer Banks, North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. I've heard it's a pretty nice place. Have you lived there all your life, Carol?
Actually, no. I was a military brat. I spent most of my time in San Diego.
Oh, wow. I love San Diego.
Yeah. How many years were you there?
25.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you've been
25 years.
You were there for a while.
How do you like it where you're at now?
I love where I live now. I there's nothing quite like, you know, the West Coast and San Diego and L.A. But being on the East Coast, where I live in the Outer Banks, it's so much like California.
Mm.
Really?
It's like a little bit of home.
Oh, wow. Very nice. And what made you move there? Had you been there before and liked it, or how did that work out?
Well, being in the military, not myself, but my father and my first husband, you travel, and I ended up, you know, settling on the East Coast and with my husband up in Maryland. After he got sick, the doctor said, take him someplace that you guys both really liked.
Right.
And there was no place else that we could think of than coming to the Outer Banks. It's a vacation spot, so everybody that comes is always in a good mood, which is always good.
Yeah, yeah, very nice.
I love that.
Very cool. So, Carol, we'll talk about a little more serious things. A book just came out called Ripped Apart. And this was written by David Black, but it's your story and your husband's story. And so tell us a little bit about this. This involves his illness, and tell us from the beginning.
Yeah, it's Ripped Apart, Living Misdiagnosed. And my husband, I met him years after my first husband. And we fell in love. Everything was wonderful. He had a pre-existing condition of Crohn's disease that went into remission and didn't have any problems with it. He got sick in 2011 and ended up in the emergency room, where even though the test didn't show it, they assumed it was his Crohn's, so they started treating him for it.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, they gave him medication, which if it was Crohn's, it would have been good. But it wasn't Crohn's. He had an ulcer after the second surgery, and they did exploratory surgery because he was getting so sick. Because they were giving him the medication, his ulcer perforated and he bled out. But it started a chain reaction that ended up with my husband's small intestines being on the outside of his body for over 3 years.
Oh, my God.
He didn't eat or drink anything for over 4 years.
He couldn't drink anything? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, nothing. He couldn't have anything in his digestive system, so everything was intravenous.
Oh, my God.
So
yes.
When you go into an emergency room, you get a small bag of fluid that keeps you hydrated. Well, this was a big bag, and it had all the nutrients in it, the TPN,
mm-hmm.
and that kept him alive. He got so sick, but you can't keep him in the hospital the whole time.
Right.
So I figured out how to take care of him, even though his intestines were on the outside. I did everything at home. And after the doctors weren't starting to shrug their shoulders and do certain things that didn't seem right to me. I started Googling it and found out that instead of being upfront with us saying, we made a mistake, we're going to correct it, they kept treating them and made them worse. And so they were hiding it. They were so worried about getting sued, they didn't take care of them right.
Wow. Wow.
Man, I've heard...
It ended up costing him his life.
Crohn's disease is so misdiagnosed.
Really?
It's really common. Yeah, my dad actually was diagnosed with Crohn's and they took out 6 feet of his intestines and he was on medications his whole life so that he didn't die, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that's a terrible way to live for 3 years.
Yeah.
And for you to take care of him, your love for him is beyond description. I mean,
to be
able to take care of someone like that for 3 years and be able to have the patience and the wherewithal and
endure
to be
that
able,
pressure.
Yeah, and the pain, you know, of seeing your loved one like that.
And you just don't want to mess up and you want to do the right thing. And I can't imagine what kind of pressure that felt like.
Right. Did you have any kind of support system?
Yes, go ahead. You two hit it on the head. I mean, those are things as an advocate that you hide. You know, you feel all those emotions, but you don't express them because you want to take care of your loved one and you want to make sure that they know that everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And you don't want them to feel guilty.
Right.
So it's a very, very intense issue, but there is help out there. Unfortunately, my support was my son, my brother-in-law, David Stern, my parents, and their church. And I had a lot of spiritual support, which I couldn't have done it without that.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It is hard.
Yeah, yeah. Was your husband, was he conscious the whole time? I mean, was he aware of his... condition?
90% of the time my husband was awake and moaning in pain.
Oh my God.
And he knew what was going on. His body started breaking down. Things started happening. He started having seizures. He started hallucinating. There's a lot of things. This went on for over 5 years.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And it was one thing after another. Seeing your loved one suffer like that is so hard to do.
Right.
And it takes a lot out of anyone. But you do it because it's your loved one and you want to make sure that you do whatever you can for them.
Of course.
And that's really why I wrote the book. Yeah. My husband wanted his story told, first and foremost.
Yeah.
But I hope that it's a guide for people that can see things that I didn't see at the time. There are so many red flags when it comes to being misdiagnosed that you're not going to catch. And hopefully this will, by my mistakes, it will help people to know what to look for.
Right.
You know, simple things that you don't think of. Doctors not looking you in the eye.
Mm.
You know, doctors looking down, talking down to you.
Wow.
If you feel that they're not telling you the truth, chances are your inner voice is right.
Yeah.
And you want to listen to it. And no, you've got to do this. I'm hoping that by telling my husband's story, that it helps people so they don't get misdiagnosed. I feel for you knowing that it was your son, right?
Who's that?
That has Crohn's?
Oh, no, it was my dad. He was diagnosed when he was, like, in his 20s.
Oh, wow, that's early on.
Yeah.
And so many people, they'll be diagnosed with Crohn's, diverticulitis, so many different things when, you know, and when they don't know for sure, you'll hear, you have irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
And that's their way of saying, we don't know exactly where it's coming from or what the problem is.
Right.
And do the research. I mean, I found out more about Crohn's, colitis, you know, and the intestinal tract, you know, and other things. My husband started having seizures. I had to learn everything about seizures. The medication turned him into a diabetic. I had to learn everything about diabetes. You know, and you want to know as much as you can to be a strong advocate for your loved one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. But, you know, you're saying mistakes. I don't think anybody can be prepared for something like this and realize, you know, they're not noticing certain things. You know, I mean, we're raised to trust doctors, you know, and to trust what they have to say and their diagnosis and everything. And then when you are betrayed by that, you know, you're powerless, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the education aspect is really important so that you can at least suggest things. Because there were things when my dad was sick that I suggested that the doctors were like, okay, I'll test for that. And then it ended up being that. So yeah. I think, you know, the more knowledge you can have in certain situations, the better. Because sometimes they're just going for the baseline and that's it.
Absolutely. And especially if you're in an ER, I mean, that's an emergency setting. They want to get you in and get you out. But they can miss things. If they move you up to a floor, they need to research more. And if you, I threw ideas at the doctors all the time. Well, what about this? What about this? And a lot of them, they took and said, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. We're going to try that. We're going to do that. And it would work. And we do put doctors on pedestals. But what we need to remember is I respect every doctor out there unless they lie to me. But they are human beings. And as a human being, we will make mistakes. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to learn from your mistake and own up to it. When the doctors try to cover up instead of owning up to a mistake, that's when major misdiagnosis comes into play.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I've met doctors who have been like, you know what? I don't totally know what to do right now. Let me do some research and then we'll reconvene later this afternoon or tomorrow. And I respect that so much because the truth is like they teach you so much in medical school and then basically doctors look things up constantly throughout. I mean, the lawyers do the same thing. Like they learn things, but as they go, they have to look things up. They don't have the knowledge completely ready unless you're extremely seasoned. And even then, you know, there's still things you have to look up.
Oh, COVID's a prime example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctors knew nothing about COVID. They just knew that it was going to affect, you know, your lungs. And they all had to learn it. Something new, and there's always new things out there.
Right.
And with that, with COVID being an issue, there are so many other things and other people out there that didn't go to the doctors that need to, and the doctors are going to be so overwhelmed. It's best for you to have as much information about what's going on with your body before you even walk in there. So you can ask the doctor questions. And like you, if the doctors didn't know the answer, respect them for saying, I'm not sure about this. Let me research and get back to you. I would respect that more than anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, what is amazing to me is, although physically, you know, he was taken care of and everything, what was your husband's mental state? I mean, obviously he believed he wanted to stay alive, right? Or did he want to end it? How? Because I mean, obviously he was kept alive for what, 5 years? You said 3 years with his organs outside his body. How do you? Yeah, I mean, where did he find that that willingness or desire to stay alive?
He had faith that he was going to be okay for a long time. I hid a lot of things from him when I would go to change his abdomen. I didn't want my husband seeing his organs moving on the outside of his body. So I would have somebody cover him with a sheet so he didn't see it until it was all covered up. Right. But he knew it. My husband had a goal. My husband loved me so much that he wanted to make sure that I was taken care of.
Wow.
That was his primary goal. I didn't know this until it was too late because I would have stopped it.
Yeah.
But all he wanted to do was make sure that I was financially taken care of.
Right.
And once we sued and I told him we had the check, he passed away 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
I hope you I hope you don't feel any guilt for anything because you did the best you could with the knowledge that you had.
Obviously, yeah.
I know, but it's so easy.
It's hard not to have guilt.
Yeah.
Right.
For something like that, watching someone suffer as long as I did, thinking, okay, maybe I should have let him go. But we made a promise to each other when he first got sick.
Yeah.
That I was going to fight as hard as I could. And I was not going to let him die until he told me he was ready.
Yeah.
Well, the last time he went to the hospital, he told me he was ready to go. So I have to realize that he wanted to hold on. This was what was important to my husband.
Right.
And I have to love him that much more for doing that for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And by me writing this book, reliving everything over and over, I'm going to relive it anyways.
Yeah.
But by me doing it, if somebody reads this book and they get the right thing out of it and they don't get misdiagnosed or it helps their loved one to get better, then it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. For those of you just joining us,
I'm still helping him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, you're making the story live on, and this will, without a doubt, it's going to help other people that are dealing with similar situations. You know, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Carol Stern about her story with Gary, her husband. The book is called "Ripped Apart: Living Misdiagnosed," and this was written with David Black, who obviously helped you write this and put it on paper. You know, this is your modern day hero in my book. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to even imagine how to deal with something like this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes your whole life. And, you know, we're sitting here talking about life being difficult and everything. But there are people that suffer so much more. That our lives are really great compared to that, you know. So we complain about things that are really unimportant when you think about it, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess they're saying here that in the description of the book that American hospitals in which 50% of the patients are in the hospital due to having been in the hospital. That's scary.
Mm-hmm.
So they do things to you in the hospital that you don't even know about, right?
I mean, we're all kind of guinea pigs in a way.
Yeah. Carol?
It's not just they'll make mistakes and they cover it up and they don't tell you.
Yeah.
But there's other things such as, you know, you go in the hospital because your appendix ruptures. Somebody in there has COVID. You catch COVID. You go home, you end up having to go back in because now you have COVID.
Right.
And that's just one. I mean, there's others. You know, C. difficile, you know, is very, germs are in hospitals.
Right.
They're all over. So you could come back. You could get an infection in an IV line and not know it until you get home and have to go back.
Yeah.
So there's mistakes that they make that are covered up. They might. There's different problems.
Right.
And to get back on what you were saying, you know, we live every day and worry about our things. Well, it got me thinking, there were times that I had my husband, he had something over him, nobody knew it, and I would take him out and I'd take him down to the store.
Right.
You don't know what the other person is going on in their life. And I try my best to smile at everybody out there because you don't know what's going on with them.
Right.
And realize, you know what? You're looking at somebody, you don't know if their intestines are on the outside of their stomach.
Right.
Because my husband's was, and he was right there in the grocery store. but you didn't know it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a great lesson to learn. I think if nothing else, you know, treat people nicer. Try to be try to have empathy for people and their situations. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Carol, our hearts go out to you and to your husband and to the family. I'm sure many people were affected by this. And you know, you're a hero. You're a hero. You sacrificed yourself and your life for somebody else. And to me, that's the definition of a hero. And I know no amount of money is going to bring him back. But I'm glad at least you're taken care of now and he knew you. That you would be fine, you know, before he passed, you know. So, as you told us,
what's the name of your book?
Thank you for having me.
The book is called "Ripped Apart: Living Misdiagnosed," and you can find it, I'm sure, everywhere books are sold. And Carol, thank you so much for enlightening us about your story. And if it helped just one person, then you've done a great job at that.
Thank you. From your mouth to God's ears. I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol, and all the best to you.
Thank you. God bless.
Bye-bye. Wow, what a story, huh, Jen?
I know.
Wow, we just don't understand what people go through, man.
No, we don't.
We can't even begin to understand. And
I mean, when you're taking care of a person like that and you don't really have any support, like, that can come out in so many other ways, like, you know, frustrations, even public frustrations,
right.
You know, feeling like you're just kind of like losing it.
Depression.
You know. I mean, it feels like you're in a complete spiral and you're like trapped on a roller coaster and you can't get off.
Right. And, you know, I feel there's got to be really strong love between you to be able to continue taking care of someone like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's someone can just bail on this whole situation and just say, I don't want to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
But not in this case. And that's why, she's a hero, you know?
Yeah.
She's paid her dues.
Yeah.
And so did her husband, you know? Wow.
Yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just... still the desire to stay alive despite all this, you know. And then there's people going and killing themselves for much smaller things.
Yeah, because things aren't working out or something.
Right, you know. So when someone's depressed, they should probably read a book like this, although it is depressing, but it's also, you know, gives you encouragement to continue.
Yeah, knowledge and also feeling like you're not alone.
Right.
Yeah.
And to see that there's always hope. And life is precious, you know?
It is. Wow. Yeah. I hope she had some support in her circle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure she did. She said there were family members that that were involved as well, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
Man.
I know. I'm trying to find good news here, Jen, but I can't.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we've got the, they found this guy passed out in the 7-Eleven parking lot. Who had drugs, loaded guns, and recall ballots of California in his car. All right? Now, so apparently he got into someone's mail or mailboxes or something because these ballots were sent already. You know, it's not like new ones or anything. So the police said they're going to, you know, pass these on to wherever they're supposed to go. But
I bet they stink.
But yeah, and I mean, I just don't know, man.
I'm like, I don't want to touch that.
I know. But not only that, but who knows what's going on with the ballots, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. God. That's why I, for one, I don't believe in the mail-in ones, you know, unless you're like really incapacitated and can't leave the house.
I mean, the last thing I want to hear about is the ballots again.
Right.
You know?
I know. Well, I'm going to do it in person, but.
So we have a family friend. This is not happy news at all. We have a family friend and her daughter, I think she's probably 3 or 4. She's been struggling with brain tumors since she was a baby. And she was in remission for a while and they just found another one. Her name is Sloan, and it grew to the size of a baseball in the past 2 weeks. And so they have the gift of life, I think it is. It's a bone marrow drive. And they're asking people to swab for Sloan to help find a bone marrow match that can help cure her brain cancer. So if anyone's listening who wants to put in a swab, you just get a little, you go to the website, Gift of Life, swab for Sloan, and they'll mail you a little packet that you go ahead and swab your mouth and then mail it back to them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then you go into like a list of potential donors, maybe not even to Sloan, maybe to somebody else. So
yeah,
you know,
where's that? Where can people go for that?
I think it's called Gift of Life. Mm-hmm. And it's swab for Sloan, Sloane.
Mm. How sad, man.
I know.
You know?
I know. She's like 3 or 4 years old. Yeah, Gift of Life.
We're hard pressed to find good news, folks. What are we going to do? Shut down the show? Because we got to find some good news.
I know.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie Jungle Cruise yet?
No.
That's a pretty good movie.
Is it a good movie?
Yeah, I liked it, you know? It's got a lot of snakes in it, though.
Oh, really?
Which I hate. I hate snakes.
You hate snakes?
Yeah. Sometimes I get like, I have to fight this, you know, my mind sometimes plays games on me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, every time I see a snake, I'm like, turn the page or something. I'm like, why do people even post snake pictures on Facebook? Who wants to see that?
I think they're kind of cute.
Yeah, that's what some people say.
Yeah.
I don't see any cuteness in the snake
really?
At all.
No, I'm going to send you a picture of a cute one.
No, please don't, okay? Please don't. I've seen enough in this movie.
I just think they're really cool creatures.
They're not. They're not. They're scary. I don't know how
they,
to deal with them.
It's like they're like land eels. Like they
don't
have
but they
any...
jump. You know, they can jump on you.
It's crazy.
It is crazy, you know?
Yeah, they like defy physics.
Right. And that's why I wouldn't know how to deal with one if I saw one. So yeah. That's why I don't like them at all. So then every time that I lay my head down, I'm like, I hope I don't dream of snakes, you know? And then an image just comes in front of me, you know?
That's how I feel about bed bugs.
Really?
Yeah. I would rather die. That was one of the first things my roommate and I bonded over was bed bug stories.
Uh-huh.
Because he had them once and I had them once when I was in New York. Because
right.
A friend that I offered to come live with me when she had a bad breakup. And then in my 400 square foot studio.
Wow.
And yeah, like we had known each other since fourth grade. And so she came to stay with me. And then she, you know, was immediately on
her?
The boy hunt and started sleeping with this guy who had bed bugs. And I told her, like, look, this is not a joke. I said, you either have to stop seeing him or you can go stay at his house. I'm like, but you can't go back and forth because what's going to happen is you're going to start school and then I'm going to be left to clean everything up myself.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened.
Really?
It was like the worst month of my life. I kicked her out and I basically slept with newspaper because you have to bag up all your stuff. I had a friend donate a blanket to me and like my entire bathroom, because it's a studio, I had nowhere to put anything else. So my bathroom was filled floor to ceiling and in the tub and everything with just bags of clothing and linens and stuff. And all my books and everything. Like, you don't have access to any of your stuff for like 2 months.
Really?
Because they have to spray several times.
Right. So it doesn't just stay in the bed. I mean, it's called bed bugs, but it goes everywhere.
Yeah, most of the time they don't even start in the bed.
Yeah.
They just happen to go to the bed because that's where you sleep and they like to come out when it's dark.
I see.
Yeah, and they can sense you.
This reminds me of my story. I must have been in my early 20s, like 20, 21. I let somebody stay at my house and she left crabs in that house.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't get rid of them either. And they go in your fucking genitals and everything.
Yeah, they do.
And it stays on the furniture and the carpet, everywhere. So I couldn't get rid
of
them no matter what
carpeting.
I did. Yeah.
I hate carpeting.
Yeah. But back in, that was in the 80s, everybody had carpet, you know?
Ugh.
And
it's terrible.
I know.
I remember in middle school, a bunch of my friends had a sleepover and they were all sexually active. I wasn't. And they all ended up giving each other crabs that night. And I ended up not going to that sleepover for some random reason, but I basically dodged getting getting crabs.
Yeah. You see, I didn't even have sex with her or anything. It was just somebody's friend.
Yeah, you can get them from a toilet seat.
Right, you know? Ew. And shit, I couldn't get rid of them in that apartment for the life of me until I finally moved out. I washed everything, threw away the last stuff I had. Like, you know, I took a shower. I had a, you know, the towel, everything else. I know.
It's disgusting. My dad made a really inappropriate joke to me once when I told him that all my friends got crabs.
Yeah.
And he said the way you get rid of them is you shave one side. And then when they all run to the other side, you stab them. Like, that's so stupid.
I know. But that's one thing when I look back, I'm like, how come I didn't think of shaving off, you know?
Yeah.
The doctor gave me, like, special shampoo and stuff, but...
I mean, it was also back then. People liked a good bush back then.
Yeah, they didn't think about shaving. Especially a guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I was, like, in third or fourth grade. My mom, who's a nurse, had gotten... brought scabies home from the hospital from one of her patients, and then I got it, and then my sister was home visiting and she used my blanket, and I was like, don't use my blanket, I have a rash. And she was like, it's fine. And I was like, no, I'm serious. She's like, whatever. She used my blanket, and then she was she was in a rehab at that time. She ended up giving scabies to everyone at the rehab, so there was a massive outbreak of scabies at the rehab. My like whole family had scabies.
Oh my God.
Which is wild.
Yeah. And this is how we carry disease from one to the other.
It's disgusting.
You
know? Yeah. It happens so easily too. So easily. I'm sure I probably gave someone in my class it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disgusting. They burrow in your skin too.
Really?
Yeah. It's gross. It's really gross. I hate it.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of chiggers?
No.
So chiggers are these bugs that live in like sandy areas. Mm-hmm. And in New Jersey, we have something called the Pine Barrens, which is like the forest, basically. And they have chiggers there that live in the sand, and they can go through like your jeans. They can literally climb through the holes of your jeans, and like not even the holes, like just like through the fabric, through anything, basically. So all the sixth graders in my hometown all go to the Pine Barrens for like 4 days and stay in cabins. It's like just tradition in my town. And so they make you get these like huge, like knee high rubber boots. And what chiggers do is once they crawl onto your skin, they burrow underneath and then they lay eggs, and it starts getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you have this big like lump. Yeah. And then they burst open and start running everywhere.
Okay. We can give up on that story, Jen.
Oh, it's quite gross.
I know. No.
Bleh.
I know.
You know?
Life, folks, life. That's how we can sum it all up.
I know.
Life, you never know.
So many variables.
I know.
You know?
I know. I walk around scared all the time.
I know, me too.
I started developing all these fears and phobias, you know?
Oh, man. Welcome to my life. I'm the CEO of this company.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like Monk. Do you remember that character, Monk?
Yeah, I never watched it, but...
Yeah. Tony Shalhoub. He was like, everything made him, like, really fidgety.
Really?
That's me in a lot of ways.
Oh, God. All right, well, we'll give you guys a break, and we'll end the show. We thank Carol Stern for calling in and telling her story.
Thank you, Carol.
I learned something from it, for sure. Everybody have a great day. Try to make life... as great as possible, because we only get one.
Enjoy whatever you can.
Exactly. And go see the Jungle Cruise. It's pretty cool.
Mm, and respect. Respect was really good, too.
Yeah, respect is good. Go respect everybody.
Yeah.
And stay away from COVID-19, because it's not fun.
No.
Not fun. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.